We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Here it is, Overnight America, hour number 3 on this now Monday, Columbus Day, which some of you may have off. I know the schools don't really take Columbus Day off anymore. I worked at a radio station in Ohio that would swap. They would swap Columbus Day in Martin Luther King Day every other year. So one year you would have Columbus Day off, and the other year you'd have Martin Luther King Day off. That's how they did their holiday schedule. That's pretty unique. You know, there was a story on KMOV that I wanted to cover here, and I got to say, it goes to the heart of some of the issues that we have here in the city of St. Louis. Also coming up, I want to talk about some moral and ethical dilemmas that are in the medical industry. For those who are curious, Dr. Jacob Appel is going to join us, and we'll talk about some of those moral dilemmas. All right, so KMOV did a story just over the weekend. Residents in the Tower Grove South neighborhood say two suspicious vehicles and people have them concerned.
No one likes that in their neighborhood, and we don't either.
Residents say it's two suspicious vehicles and individuals that have them concerned.
It does not make me entirely comfortable.
They tell me since September, a man driving a gray Ford Escape and a woman driving this blue car in this video have been using their area as a drug exchange point.
Well, that's interesting. Do you remember not that long ago there were some councilmen on the city of St. Louis that, including our prosecutor, our circuit attorney, Kim Gardner, backing up this claim that, you know, police shouldn't be out there hassling, you know, suspected drug dealers. I would say most people that live in the city of St. Louis, if they were witnessing drug deals in front of their home, they would like the police to intervene. And think about it this way. Imagine if these people that are doing these drug deals also have weapons on them. It's not unheard of that a drug dealer would keep a gun on them, legal or not. It doesn't matter. What happens if something goes down? Well, a bullet could very well go through an innocent bystander's home and hit a loved family member. They don't want that junk on their streets. They don't want that junk in front of their house. But what happened last time we saw one of these incidents? An open-air drug deal, people all around the car, the police witness this, they show up, they see the drugs, they see the gun, they try to arrest him, he reaches for the gun, the suspect is shot and killed, and then we have aldermen out there yelling and screaming, oh no, this isn't what the police's job is. They shouldn't have been out there hassling these people, trying to make it into some sort of racial issue. It's so ridiculous. I think we need to really take back and remember stories like this, where you could preemptively notice these things happening. You could preemptively call attention to the problem and try to stop that violence in your neighborhood before it begins. However, we don't have the support of a lot of people, unfortunately.
Three times a week, another car would pull up and they would get out, and it looked like they were transferring prescription bags of prescriptions.
One resident told me she saw several bags of prescription medication covering the passenger seat of one of the vehicles. Residents say the individuals were last spotted this past Wednesday.
It's just dangerous, in my opinion. You know, not only things escalating, but things getting dropped on the street that kids could come into contact with.
News 4 found St. Louis Metropolitan Police have received several calls related to possible drug sales in the area. Police say they are investigating, but didn't have any other information to give.
What's happened is...
Well, this is Tower Grove South and KMOV reporting this. You got to take these things seriously. We just had a big street cleanup where the county, well, not the county, but the state had police come in, the highway patrol and whatnot. And it did. It resulted in a lot of different, like this is from last weekend. I don't have what happened over the course since then. But this is on October 8th, this was reported. So this would have been for not this past weekend, but the weekend before, October 4th, 5th, 6th in that area. More than 50 indictments have been brought so far under a program aimed at addressing high rates of violent crime in St. Louis. So 30 drug trafficking and 59 unlawful weapons charges, 4 carjacking indictments added into there as well. And that has to do with the Safer Streets program that they brought here to St. Louis. You know, this is good. This is what we need to do. We need to clean up this kind of stuff happening. And Here, let me play a little bit more of this. One part where one of the residents has a suspicion of why this is happening in their neighborhood.
Is the police come, but by then the people have left.
No arrests have been made, and that's why News 4 has blurred the man's face in this video. Some residents believe their street is being used because it's quiet and secluded. Set off the busy Grand Boulevard drag.
People who don't realize the neighborhood has changed so much.
We would like the guy to get caught and just not move to another street, because then it continues.
And then what happens if the guy gets caught? Let's just throw some hypotheticals out there from what we've seen. If it's part of this Safe Street initiative, that's good. If it's just part of St. Louis County or St. Louis, well, it's not county, but St. Louis Metropolitan Police, they could arrest this guy, get him red-handed, have him confess to being a drug dealer. Then you get prosecutors, you'll get Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner out there saying that, oh, we're not going to bring this up. It's we got to stop this. We need to see more of what the Safe Street Initiative is able to bring in some safety to this area and not take it so lightly. I'm going to say it again. If it were to happen in front of any of the aldermen's houses, they'd have a complete different understanding of what this was happening. No one should be putting a safe drug deal in front of anyone's home. This shouldn't be happening. And unfortunately, the police are trying to respond to this sort of thing. They're doing their job. They're doing the best they can with the limited resources that are given to them. But we still see issues. That was from KMOV over the weekend. I thought I'd share that with you. All right. So there's another story I wanted to get to in a moment. Who Says Your Dad is the name of a book by Dr. Jacob Appel. He's a lawyer, but he's also a doctor, a medical doctor. And he's looked through some of the different research and things that have been available when it comes to moral medical dilemmas, ethical dilemmas even. How would you handle a situation that he brings up at the very start of the interview? Let's say you're a dad, okay? You need a kidney transplant. You go in and you're at the stage where you're trying to test your family members because they have the highest chance of being a match to be a successful transplant. And then a lot of times, if you don't know who the donor is going to be, it makes it very difficult because then you can sit on a wait list for years. So if you know who the donor is, a family member, they can expedite that and get that done fairly quickly. Well, you know, timetable-wise, relative to what it would take to be on that list. So the son goes in, gets the swab, gets the test, does all of this. The doctor runs the test and comes back and says, well, you are not a match for your father. And then the doctor has other information in his hand. They find out through this test that he is not the biological son. Do you tell him that he is not the biological son? Some doctors say you have to. Some doctors say you can't. These are the type of medical dilemmas that doctors have to face. It's really fascinating. So we're going to go through a couple of those scenarios coming up on Overnight America KMOX. And joining us now is Dr. Jacob Appel, and looking at Who Says You're Dead, Medical and Ethical Dilemmas for the Curious and Concerned. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What an interesting idea to write about. Who Says You're Dead? Medical and ethical dilemmas. Can you give us some examples of some of those dilemmas you cover in your book?
Sure. So the first dilemma in the book involves a patient who comes to the hospital with his father to see whether or not he's a match to donate a kidney. And it turns out there's bad news and there's worse news. The bad news is the son is not a match with his father. And the worst news is he's actually not his father's biological son.
Ooh, boy.
And then the ethical dilemma that arises is, should the hospital tell either of them this?
Oh.
And there are trade-offs on both sides. On the one hand, telling them may disrupt their family life significantly. But if you don't tell the son, he may go through life thinking his genetic history and his family history is different than it is. He might choose not to be screened for certain diseases, or when he has children of his own, not to have be screened before he conceives. So the classic example would be, he thinks he comes from a long line of Scandinavians. Mm. They offer him a test that would occur in newborns who are Ashkenazi Jews. He says no, and then he has a baby born with Tay-Sachs. So the trade-offs are significant.
Well, Dr. Jacob Appel, meaning you are a medical doctor, when you normally get tested for like a kidney or whatever, are they doing DNA testing? Why would they even test for something like that?
So they can test pretty clearly whether you're a match or not, and also incidentally, they will discover whether or not you're biologically related. It seems not the purpose, but it's inevitable. It'll become clear to the physicians.
Oh, interesting. So those are some pretty big dilemmas. And these are actual real-life dilemmas that have happened?
They absolutely are. This actually happens more than you might think. Estimates are somewhere between 1% and 4% of Americans are mistaken about their paternity. So when I teach the medical students, and we have a class of about 150, I say a handful of people in this room are mistaken. If you think that case is challenging, though, a variation on it that is even more difficult, what if they're husband and wife, and they come forward to see if they're potential matches, and they discover there's good news and there's better news. They discover that on the one hand, they are potential matches, but on the other hand, they're also siblings.
Oh, no.
These are all terrible.
So what happens when you're training and you're going through all of these years and years and years to become a doctor? Do they cover this in one of your classes?
Unfortunately, no. My training, I'm a physician, but I'm also an attorney, and I have a graduate degree in bioethics. So I taught bioethics for a long time at Brown before I entered medicine. So when I teach for medical students, we introduce them to ways of thinking about these cases, but they don't get nearly the in-depth study one might hope for.
Wow. Who says your dead medical and ethical dilemmas for the curious and concerned? Do you come up with conclusions of what you think should happen in these scenarios?
Well, I always have thoughts of my own, but I haven't shared them in the book. One of the goals of the book is to get people to think about these issues and to realize that even though they may have a particular value set or a particular belief system, people who disagree with them are not evil. They may just be wrong or misguided or start with different premises. And one of the goals is to get people thinking about why people might view things from the other side.
Wow. So in these different scenarios, do you sometimes wonder what would you prefer to happen if you were one of the people involved? Is that how you come to some of your conclusions, or are you looking at it from a purely ethical and medical standpoint and you're trying to figure out what would be the best procedure?
Well, I think the challenge is, on the one hand, you want to do what's best globally for society as a whole and for people generally. On the other hand, once you think of yourself in a particular situation, your motivation may be very different. So the classic example would be, there was a patient in North Carolina named Slim Watson, whose healthcare cost $5 million a month.
Oof.
Now, from a global healthcare point of view, that's an awful lot of flu shots and mammograms we're not paying for, and you wouldn't pay for it. But from an individual point of view, if you're Slim Watson or his wife, you really want that money spent on you.
Mm. That's a lot of money. How could you even possibly spend that much money a month on someone's healthcare? I don't get that.
He had a very, very rare disease for which there was only one experimental treatment that I believe had to be flown in from Denmark on a regular basis.
Oh, wow.
As I recall, Duke University sent his wife the bill for the first month of care, and it was only something in the hundreds of thousands of dollars range because their computer system couldn't print the number to the left.
Oh. Wasn't used to seeing numbers that high. That thing scares
me.
Yeah, you probably have run across some of these in your own professional career before, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. So the book combines cases that are in the media, cases that I've learned from colleagues, some cases I've experienced myself. But one of my goals is, rather than presenting this as an academic book, is to make these cases fun. So I discuss how celebrities have dealt with these issues, how they've been dealt with in popular culture, historical figures. It's an entertaining book. If nothing else, this is a book that will get you arguing with your spouse on long car trips.
Yikes. Do you really want to figure out the answer to some of these? And I'm guessing each doctor kind of handles it a different way. So a couple of the scenarios you brought up, if these examples existed in real life, do you ever give what actually happened in the conclusion of some of these dilemmas?
So usually the cases are cases that have not occurred once, but have occurred multiple times. So I often share how different hospitals or different doctors have resolved the question. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's considerable variation and sometimes there's very little.
Wow. I want to know how, generally speaking, if you find out with the paternity, for example, you get tested for, see if you're a match for your dad's kidney and you find out that he's not your dad. How did that one resolve? I got to know.
So it's interesting. So there are three different approaches. Some hospitals do divulge this information. Some hospitals don't. An increasing number tell you in advance, if we discover that you're not related, we're not going to tell you, so don't rely on us.
Oh.
That raises questions that you might not want to raise. The analogy I always draw is, if you ask your spouse over dinner, honey, if I were cheating on you, would you want to know? That sort of gives you the answer in the question.
Yeah, I guess it does. Well, you see those videos online on YouTube where they're trying to, like, the gender reveal. Maybe the doctor can send home a balloon with the answer inside, and if they decide to pop it, they pop it. If not, then they'll never know.
And so once the genie's out of the bottle, it's hard to put it back. That's the challenge.
Joining us here is Dr. Jacob Appel and Who Says You're Dead? Medical and Ethical Dilemmas for the Curious and Concerned. What are some of the other dilemmas that you've researched and talked about in your book?
Sure. So let's take the title dilemma, Who Says You're Dead? So when I ask people, what is death? Most people have a fairly straightforward answer, and it has something to do with not breathing and not being responsive and not having vapor on the mirror when we hold it up to your lips. But in reality, it's much more complicated. Most states, 48 of them, accept brain death, this whole brain death, is the only form of death. However, there are some religious communities and individuals who don't believe in brain death. They believe as long as your heart is still beating, even on a machine, you're alive. So what happens when parents have a child who is legally dead, brain dead, but still on a ventilator and breathing through a machine and heart is still beating, who want to take that kid home, keep that kid in their living room? Should they be allowed to do that?
You know, we also saw some of those dilemmas probably in the last couple of years with the way healthcare works in other countries, where there is a panel of people that will make a decision which will be different than what the parents' wishes are. And there was that one famous case where the parents wanted to bring their kid over to the United States to seek treatment. The panel over there said, well, no, we're going to do what's in the best interest of the child, so we're going to allow the child to die here. Those things are real-life scenarios where there are conflicts that are involved.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I always emphasize when I teach and when I talk about this to public audiences, we want to have rules in advance. Because if you have rules in advance, they seem fair globally and they achieve the outcome society wants. If you decide these cases on a case-by-case basis, you always or very often succumb to your heartstrings rather than to the best rational approach.
I don't think many people know the rules ahead of time. Are they even spelled out somewhere?
For some of these things, yes. For others, the technology is evolving so rapidly, and our society's ability to grapple with these questions due to political polarization and just honestly indifference is falling so far behind that the rules aren't spelled out, which is very frustrating as a bioethicist.
Yeah. Do you think many people are starting to talk about artificial intelligence to help make decisions in the courts, try to take bias off the table? Do you feel that in the future, maybe medical decisions will be determined by a computer algorithm?
I think we're already headed in that direction. My only caveat is somebody's got to program the computer and somebody's got to design the artificial intelligence initially. And we want to be very careful what biases we build into the system.
There's always going to be that. Someone's got to make the computer. So there's always going to be that decision. So I guess you could have the granddaddy of all decision makers that would be basically writing the constitution of decisions. But then again, who's to say one doctor wants to go by a different set of rules and another doctor doesn't? You know, if some of these ethical dilemmas pop up and each of them handle it differently, who says they're going to want to take any of these artificial intelligent devices to make the decisions for them?
Yeah, 99% of the time, the algorithm may get it right. But the reason you have a doctor and not a machine is a very rare case where the doctor's instinct tells him something different.
How do you even begin to answer some of these medical and ethical dilemmas? The name of the book is called Who Says You're Dead? We're going to go through a couple of more with Dr. Jacob Appel coming up next on KMOX. The book is Who Says You're Dead? Medical and Ethical Dilemmas for the Curious and Concerned. Where can people find your book?
Bookstores, internet, Amazon. It's published by Algonquin Workman, so it's fairly well available. And I want to emphasize, it is a book for lay people, not a book for medical experts. Though if you have children or grandchildren thinking about medical school, it's a fun book to introduce them to these subjects.
So it's not something that you're going to just perhaps buy as a school textbook?
Definitely not. It's a book for road trips or discussed at dinner.
Well, lucky for the people listening here, that means the book's not going to cost about $500. So that's good.
Yes, it's keep as these sorts of books go.
Do you know, and I got to ask, so Dr. Jacob Appel joining us here on KMOX, do doctors dread moments like this, these ethical dilemmas, or do they kind of like the challenge of them?
I think if you ask them in the abstract, they would tell you, oh, I want to avoid these cases. They just cause stress and anxiety. In practice, one of the joys of working in a hospital setting, working with patients, is the complexity of human life. And as a psychiatrist especially, like I may feel for the particular patient and wish the scenario hadn't arisen, but I also take a certain fascination in the complexity of the human condition.
I think that sometimes you find these family doctors that have been with a family for many years, and in some cases, even decades, when you talk about multiple generations. And my doctor was like that when I was growing up. My parents took me to a doctor that they knew, and we, you know, I had the same doctor for many, 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 many years. It probably helps when you have a relationship with your medical providers, as opposed to, for example, going into a hospital in an emergency situation where they don't know who you are.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. We've seen a transformation in medicine over the last generation. It's become far more corporate. It's become far more impersonal. And the result is, on the whole, people have less respect for the medical profession. People trust their doctors less. And people's healthcare declines.
Yeah.
In the same way, you want to have a doctor who knows you well. And I cannot emphasize this enough. Bioethicists like me, I think, and I'm biased, are great people. So we're great to meet at weddings, at parties. The one place you don't want to see us is in the hospital.
Yeah.
And the best way to avoid that is to talk to your loved ones about what you want done in complicated situations.
That seems to be a conversation many people avoid. Now, you know, you don't really talk about those things.
I mean, people often assume that their spouse or their children both know their views and share their views, and then somebody will become incapacitated, and they will have two sisters, and the sisters will have a completely different take on what their brother wanted done.
Yeah, there's always going to be some sort of legal battle. I'm guessing that some of these medical and ethical dilemmas that you have researched and talked about in your book may have had some sort of legal twist to them where it may have gone to court when there's been some discrepancy.
They very often do, and in a large number of these cases, when you read about them in hindsight after the court decision, you think, if only this person had sat down when they were healthy and talked to their healthcare proxy, talked to their loved ones, all of this could have been avoided.
Yeah. What are some of those other dilemmas you've looked at in the book? I'm curious.
Yeah, sure. Well, one of the things I look at is I look at a handful of more practical dilemmas. Mm-hmm. So, for example, to what degree should you be able to choose the race, ethnicity, background of your doctor? And at one extreme, most people can reach a consensus. I walk into the hospital and I say I want a white Christian doctor. We generally don't honor that. Mm-hmm. But I'm an African-American patient, and I say I want a African-American psychiatrist because a white psychiatrist can't understand what I've been through, a harder question. I'm a female obstetrics patient, and I say I want a female obstetrician to deliver my baby. A lot of people feel comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. But then I'm a male urology patient, and I want a male surgeon to perform my surgery. Now, we don't know whether the reason for that is that you don't feel comfortable with women seeing certain parts of your body, or whether you think men are better surgeons. So I do a lot of work on that. And a really concrete example that does come up more often than you might think. Relatives, usually children, will come up to you and say, I'm embarrassed to ask this, but my father, who is 95 years old and very sick, he's deeply prejudiced. If you send him a home health aide of whatever ethnicity or background, he'll find a pretext for firing them, and it won't serve their welfare and will inconvenience him. You're not going to change him at 95, so can we have a home health aide of this particular demographic?
Wow.
Whether we should honor that or not is really hard.
Those are some pretty deep questions. In fact, that probably happens an awful lot where people just want, they come at it honestly and say, I just want to avoid the conflict that I know is about to happen. So we could do it the hard way or the easy way. Sometimes you think, you know, even though you don't feel good ethically doing it, but you want to be able to do it the easy way, considering the hard way is such a hassle.
Exactly. Medical interactions are far more intimate and personal than most transactions in the business world or a lunch counter or a bus. So it's really hard to get the balance right.
Yeah. So the book, again, called Who Says You're Dead? Medical and Ethical Dilemmas for the Curious and Concerned. Dr. Jacob Appel, the concerned. Who's the concerned, by the way?
All of us should be concerned.
Yeah.
An example, I imagine many of your listeners are either riding in their cars or they're at work and they've driven to work. And I always ask people, did you lock your doors before you came to work? Almost everybody in urban areas says yes. And then I say, did you dust your doorknobs for DNA? And they say, of course not. And I say, well, you know, in most states, DNA theft is legal, and a stranger can pinch your DNA from your doorknob. They can do some genetic testing. They can find out your genetic risks for diseases, find out whether you're related to the people you think you're related to, and they can send that information to your girlfriend, to your boss, all perfectly legal in many states. So we should all be very concerned.
Wow. Now I'm going to start wearing gloves to work. Thank you for that. Dr. Jacob Appel, again, if people wanted to check out your book, Who Says You're Dead, where can they find it?
Bookstores, on the internet, Amazon. It's readily available, and it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Hey, Dr. Jacob Appel, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. Wow, it's amazing how fast these nights get to roll along, doesn't it? Well, we're going to take a quick break here in a moment. And that's about it for us here tomorrow. If you don't remember, because I'm sure you do, you don't need a reminder, but got a lot of games coming up. So the Cardinals have a Monday night game, Tuesday night game, Wednesday day game. Now, these are going to happen in Washington. It's a do-or-die moment, really. Even though the Cardinals is a best-of-seven series, they got to win here. If they don't win here, it's too much, too much. So let's hope that they do it, and they show a little hope. They got some life left in them. They're going up a really strong pitcher. So that's later today. You're going to get it right on KMOX. You see that we have Ozzie Smith doing a special show with Tom Ackerman, 2 o'clock during the series here. Whew, how exciting is that? So they come in and they do their conversation, and what great insights. You're going to hear that at 2 o'clock. And then, of course, the game coverage with Mike Shannon, John Rooney, Klaibs. We got the whole team out there, Ricky Horton, Chris Raby. The whole team is ready to go. I'm excited to hear it. Later tonight, it's Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America. Thanks for joining us here tonight. And man, I have been hitting the DayQuil all day and then going home and hitting the NyQuil. And then after that, who knows what happens. Tomorrow's going to be a rough day, I'm sure. You know, you get those achy, and I'm sure it has to do with the weather. You feel achy, and your throat hurts, and I don't got too much of the sniffles, but I go online, and I post this up, and sure enough, so many other people are feeling it too right now. So many other people. So if you're in that boat, this up and down temperatures, if you miss the weather, we're going to see a high of 68, then a high of 70, then it's down to 56 on Wednesday, then the lower 60s by Thursday. So it's up, down stuff in the overnight hours where it's down to the 40s like we're seeing right now. Man, it's tough. So go home, get a little extra rest, drink a lot of tea, stop drinking coffee. I don't know what the best way to fix this situation. If you have any good things that your mom used to do or told you, this is how you get rid of a cold. What are some of those? I do the Reader's Digest ones. My grandma used to cut out little articles in Reader's Digest and hang them up on her fridge. You know, little things that said, do you have a toothache? Put a clothespin in between the webbing of your forefinger and your thumb. You know, your pointer finger and your thumb. Yeah, put a little, and she would do these things and she would swear by them. The effectiveness of them, probably not effective at all. But she loved little things like that. If you got any good tips, you can text them to me at 436-7900. There's a couple of text messages. I don't know if Doug's still listening. I know Doug listens all night, but I didn't get to read this from earlier. And thanks you for that, Doug. And there was one other text message that came in about the trolley. Trolley is going nowhere. I don't know. I feel like it's done November 15th. I think he meant that. It's sometimes hard to interpret these text messages, but I think that person who texted it in meant it as in it's not going to find $700,000 of money laying around. Like, who's going to throw $700,000? And I know Joe Edwards is a very charismatic and likable guy, and many people do like him. And he's done a lot of good for that area. And it was, you know, it was a gamble. But if you look at the numbers, man, it was not worth the gamble. I don't know who insures this sort of thing. You know what I read online as part of this, too? I read that when they were building this and putting the tracks down in the road, they part of the money that was spent was insurance to repair the roads if they have to reverse it. So that's already paid for. Isn't that, that's kind of good news. I guess you're trying to look for something nice. If you missed this article from over the weekend at KMOX.com, it says, without an infusion of $200,000, the loop trolley could be, bye-bye, see you later, packing its bags to Albuquerque by November 15th. And that's just till the end of the year. They're already going to be cutting services. And I got to say, even from my own personal experiences of riding the trolley, they've been subpar. Not good. And I haven't been on it when there's been more than 10 people. And that's even gracious. Like the first time I rode it, no one was there. It was the one person waiting for me. And there was, it never came. We waited an hour in the sun standing because there's no park benches over at the History Museum to sit and wait for this thing. So we tried it for time two. There might have been 4 or 5 other people other than me and my buddy. And then when I went with my wife and son, there was probably more along the lines of six or seven, and it got so bad while we waited an hour for them to fix their problem that they couldn't figure out, that the people inside of the trolley were calling Ubers and getting them to take them back. They were done waiting. One person even noticed one of their neighbors happened to be walking down by the loop. They got out and they said, hey, can we just pitch a ride with you? And they said, sure. So they left that way too. It's very embarrassing. The sad thing is, whatever their vision was of this, what they thought was going to happen, it is sad that the vision was, you know, pie in the sky. It'd have been nice, but no one other than the workers and maybe some people online that will refuse to criticize any of the problems of this city. There's so many. I go on to St. Louis, the Reddit page on St. Louis, and I'll look at some of these posts, and there will be people that will just absolutely go crazy if you say anything negative about Metrolink. They'll go absolutely bananas, and they'll yell and they'll scream. And same thing with the loop trolley. There's people there that go absolutely crazy if you say anything negative about the loop trolley. And honestly, you just want to be realistic about the thing. Anyone could have looked at those finances just like we did and realized, okay, another year delay. Okay, another year delay. All right. So $25 million here, $25 million there. Okay, $52 million. No one's riding it. This doesn't add up. Okay, guys, sorry. We're going to have to close up shop. Now, if this was any other business, you'd have to cut your losses. You'd have to say, sorry, it was a nice try, but see you later. I mean, who else is going to keep pumping money into this? And please don't say the taxpayers. Please don't say that. Where is that $700,000 to keep this thing running that no one uses, that goes to nowhere, going to come from? What are you going to take it away from? We should phrase it that way. This is going to go up for vote. And the big question is, what services are you going to cut in order to pay for this trolley service that no one uses? I'd like to know. Kevin Colleen's got one great whole nother story for you here as we close out the show.
The cooks at the White Castle just south of Busch Stadium are busier than ever. General Manager John Johnson says Cardinals fans have been pouring in during these playoff games. Some of them are regulars, but others have never been to a White Castle in their life.
You can usually spot them right off when they come in the door. They have that bewildered look. They seem a little overwhelmed.
They smell the onions and cabbage.
You can tell that it's an experience for them. It's a memory for them.
And the hamburgers here are smaller and square.
They are. They're about two and a half inches by 2.5 inches, and they're pretty thin. But
what is it about them? They pack a punch, don't they?
Well, I think it's the onions, and there's no getting around that. I think that's where that unique flavor comes from, the USDA beef, the bed of onions.
I mean, by the fifth inning.
Check swing. Did he go? Yes, he did, says our third base umpire.
What's your best-selling item when you go into the Cardinals playoffs?
Definitely just a 10-sack of burgers or cheeseburgers. You can't go wrong.
A 10-sack?
Oh, yeah. We got those on sale right now, and we sell them all year round, and it's a great one-bag item to carry out, feed a bunch of people.
You ever have somebody who buys a 10-sack just for themselves?
Oh, yeah. I can't name names, but...
Can you spot them?
Oh, yeah.
What do they look like?
All kinds. There's not one special kind. They're old, young.
Are they full-bodied?
You know what? It's the skinnier ones that seem to do more damage.
A former St. Louisan visiting here from California was at the counter with his teenage son telling him about White Castle.
A religious experience, yeah. I was telling my son that when I was his age, he's 17, I used to stop by like between meals, 3 p.m, and just grab 10 for a snack and then go home and eat. And we're actually...
How much do you weigh?
150.
You can eat 10 White Castle hamburgers?
Definitely, yeah. That's a snack.
Cardinals fans are expected to gobble up 10,000 White Castle hamburgers per home game this playoff series. That means somewhere at a White Castle warehouse, the foreman is telling the truck driver to hurry up and get that semi full of hamburgers over to the Busch Stadium location. The Cardinals are in the playoffs, and they need reinforcements. With a whole other story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Ain't that the truth? Boy, do they need those reinforcements. Kevin with another great whole another story. Well, that about does it here for Overnight America. We'll be back again tomorrow. Barry and I don't take a turn. This is one of those things. When I was working in Indiana, one of my biggest regrets was not taking sick days when I needed to take sick days. So I'm on the fence. There could be a guest host tomorrow. You're going to have to listen and find out. See, it's almost like those old radio dramas. Tune in tomorrow for the chilling conclusion of Will He Call Off? I guess you'll have to find out. But what I would like for you to do is go online to whatever podcast app you're using, if you don't know what a podcast app is. Your smartphone has one. If you got one of those phones you can touch with your finger, as long as it's not one of those flip phones from about 20 years ago. Yeah, it's easy. You just open up the podcast app, just look for it somewhere on there. It comes inside of every smartphone, and then do a search for Overnight America. Once you find that podcast, you'll see a picture of my smiling face, kind of like a Mona Lisa smile. It's not like a full-blown smile. It's a mini smile. And also inside of there, hit the subscribe button. That way you get alerts whenever there's a new episode updated. And on top of that, even better, if you could leave a review, that's so much better. Leaving those reviews helps other people discover this podcast and discover this show, which we really need help with. So do that tonight if you got it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.